Hello and welcome to Talking Trading. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's great to have your company. When a marketer secures one of the biggest comedic stars of a generation as a spokesperson for a product, he must be pretty good at what he does. John Dwyer from the Institute of WOW joins us today to share some of his key marketing messages, as well as what it was like to work with Seinfeld. We also speak to Joseph Barrington Liu, a former stockbroking colleague and friend of Chris Tate's, to find out about the early trading years of Chris. But first up, here's Chris Tate himself to give us the news for the week ending 5th of September.
And now, Market Matters with Chris Tate.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Caroline.
How did the US markets close last week?
Well, the Americans once again continue to be the standout market all around the world with, well, the Dow's puddling along at just over 17,000, trying hard to make sort of substantive gains. The standout there is the broader market, the S&P 500, which just continues to make new highs week after week. There is a disconnect between the Dow, which is 30 stocks, and the S&P 500, which contains 500. The S&P 500 is at present the stronger of the two indices. The Dow's pottering along, but not really getting going over, say, the past 7 to 10 days. But still marginally better than us. We had a woeful close on Friday where the market fell out of bed on the open and just kept falling out of bed all day.
Tell us more about the Australian market. What were some hot and what were some cold sectors last week?
We were mixed, is the best way to put it, in terms of we're not actually really going anywhere in a hurry. We're going somewhere slowly, and that's probably the best way to sort of give an overarching view of the Australian market at present. I'm still moderately bullish. We're still struggling at sort of 5.6, 5.7. We're just not getting going, but I'm still slowly adding to my local portfolio bit by bit by bit. But again, it's really a race between two snails here in Australia.
Is this unusual? Have you seen this pattern emerge in the charts before?
We've had periods where we have struggled. For example, post the 87 crash in the early 90s, we did have a sideways movement, but we then broke out into the 90s bull market, which ran us into, you know, the bull market of the tech boom. This market's gone sideways now since the GFC. Now, we've popped above resistance. The problem is we're just not doing so with the same energy that the Americans have. The US market's clearly the big performer since the GFC. Its performance is over double ours, and that is problematic. But part of the problem we face is we've had the mining boom. The mining boom's come and gone. The mining boom was largely an infrastructure boom, so it was a mining infrastructure boom because we didn't get the ramp-up in commodity prices that characterises true mining booms. So that's now come and gone. And what we have seen is a slowdown in China. When we look at Chinese markets for the past few years, if you look at the Shanghai Composite, it's been drifting down since 2009. The FTSE 25, or the FTSE China 25, has been sideways since 2011. But there is a ray of hope. Being somewhat of a China watcher, both the Shanghai Composite is starting to look like it's testing that downtrend, and the FTSE China 25 is trying to break out of that consolidation. If we do get some substantive or positive lift out of China, you will get a flow-on effect here locally. And the interesting thing I've noted, and I noted this over the weekend, when I scan my US stocks, I also scan the US ETFs, the exchange-traded funds, and popping up were Asian-based ETFs, things like Templeton Dragon, the MSCI Pacific ex-Japan ETF. Even here locally, this morning I noticed that AMP's Capital China Fund popped up as a buy. So there is something happening in China that runs contrary to what economists are saying. Because I noted last week that economists were, I'll use the technical term for when economists speak, crapping on about our housing boom here. And they're saying, look, it won't last because China's stuffed. Well, the problem with economists is there is a disconnect between the stock market and the economy. And there is a profound disconnect between what economists say about anything and what is happening in the real world. So there is actually some interest in Chinese equities markets appearing. And this is appearing in the price action that's coming out of China. So that for me is a more positive little thing for the domestic market.
Brilliant.
It's a ray of light for us.
Any patterns jumping out from the charts?
The big thing of last week, the big standout news of last week was European central banks cutting their rediscount rate, which took everybody surprise. And that caused the euro to fall out of bed. And that, it didn't really, the euro falling out of bed didn't take people by surprise. The extent of the fall, I think, caught people by surprise. And so you've got this weakness in both the euro and the British pound at present. And they've actually provided some wonderfully tradable little trends for FX traders. And it's been a nice little top-up for a period when FX markets have been going sideways. They seem to be now breaking out of that consolidation. So if you're looking for markets that are actually moving and actually have some degree of energy to them, it's a matter of looking towards FX markets, looking towards further weakness in the euro, the British pound, and I'm looking this week to add to my short euro-yen, provided we get a break below, say, 135.5.
Advice for traders this week?
My view is the US market is going to continue to be the US market. I continue to top up my US portfolios every week. They simply generate such a plethora of buy signals that you can't ignore it. I'm looking for further weakness in the euro, the British pound, but also, as you'd expect with FX, conversely, strength in the Aussie. That's my main focus for this week.
Chris Tate, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Caroline.
Hi, this is Steve Nissen, the father of candlesticks in the Western world, author of Japanese Candlestick Charting Technique, and I listen on an ongoing basis to Talking Trading.
Jerry Seinfeld is one of the biggest comedic stars of our time. And John Dwyer is the marketing connoisseur who pulled off the almost impossible and secured Jerry as the spokesperson for the Greater Building Society. John has also been the marketing brains for the likes of McDonald's, KFC, Caltech, 7-Eleven, Channel 9 and Westfield. He joins us now to discuss his wow marketing principles and what he learned from working with Seinfeld.
John Dwyer. Wow. How are you, John?
What a good intro. Hi, Caroline. How are you?
Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
So why does every business need a wow factor?
Well, look, in this day and age, I believe that unless you have that, there's a good chance you're going to be invisible, particularly if you're a small to medium-sized business, because we are exposed, apparently, to over 3,000 messages a day in the online world that we live in. So whether it's radio or TV or, you know, online, whether it be pay-per-click, whether it be billboards on the side of the freeway, you know, we've got thousands of these messages coming through to us from all sorts of businesses every day. So unless you are a big brand like a Coca-Cola or McDonald's, if you don't have some sort of wow factor, then be prepared to be invisible.
Okay, so how does a business go about devising the right sort of wow?
You know what? I'm a member of ADMA, the Australian Direct Marketing Association. And the interesting thing is, Caroline, is that when they have their Logie Awards each year for, you know, the best wows, the best sales promotions, for the past four or five years, the companies that have won the award had a wow factor that was in no way, shape or form had a relationship with their product. So, for example, if I was Cadbury, instead of giving 10% more on that crunchy bar, because I think we're all overweight enough, I'd probably say collect five of those wrappers and get a free cinema ticket. So I guess what I'm saying is that when you're developing a wow factor for your business, don't think it always has to be another free version of whatever you're giving away, whether it's a hair shampoo or a bottle of soft drink or whatever it might be. Think about hooking people into a repetitive trade pattern and giving them a free gift or free offer that's completely unrelated to your product.
Because you did that with your football tickets, didn't you?
Yep, yeah, the football trading cards. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, what I did, I had the bubblegum trading card license back in the 90s, and any of the men that are listening to this Skype call would be very familiar with collecting football cards. The women aren't into it so much. And Scanlon's Bubblegum had looked after the license for the rugby league cards for many, many years, and I took it over in the mid-90s. And what I did was that I brought into Vogue, Mal Meninga was playing at the time.
Mal, I remember, yeah, Mal.
Good old Mal, and I got him to help me out with lots of, you know, promotion on TV and what have you. And what we would do is we'd say, look, collect X number of wrappers of the football cards, and you would get a free gift that was completely unrelated to the football card. So it might be tickets to the semi-finals. And that's the thing that I had a bank just in the last few years called the Greater Building Society, and the big win for them was that when they went away from price marketing, and that is get a home loan for a certain percentage, to get a home loan, get a free holiday. Now, what did a free holiday have to do with a home loan? And they tripled their home loans in the first 18 months.
Yes. All right. We'll get onto the Greater Bank in a minute. I just wanted to ask you, why is it so important to position yourself as the expert in your field?
Look, I think the main reason is that we all gravitate to experts. If you think about Steve Irwin, he was a wildlife crocodile expert, and we just all gravitated to him because we trusted his advice. And Don Burke has done the same thing. The Master Chefs now are doing the same thing. They've become a celebrity expert in their field, and price goes out the window. Can you imagine if you had Steve Irwin available to speak at your conference? Do you think you'd be asking or worrying so much about the price? You wouldn't, because you're prepared to pay more for an expert. And the interesting thing is that now that Steve unfortunately has passed, there's lots of wildlife experts on TV the weekend. But guess what? When he was alive, they were still around, but they were invisible because he stole the mantle of being the expert. So no matter what game you're in, whether it's trading or whether it's a butcher, baker, candlestick maker, if you are good at what you do, I'm not suggesting that you fake it till you make it. I mean, you wouldn't want your heart surgeon to do that. But if you're actually good at what you do, take the mantle of the expert and you just watch people gravitate naturally to you.
And how important is passion in that role of the expert? Because Steve Irwin was an incredibly passionate man.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't fake it. I mean, look, you'll be found out very quickly if you fake it. We all know that Gordon Ramsay is pretty passionate about cooking. And we know that, you know, Jamie Oliver is the same thing. We know that Jamie Dury, likewise, with the landscaping and Don Burke and the Master Chefs and all of these people that take the mantle of experts, you can see. Even the guy, what's the guy that does the animals, the pet guy with the little Scottish cap on?
Oh, yeah, glasses. I don't know, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Is on Channel 7, I think he is. You know that he's passionate. You know that he's passionate. And so, therefore, it's absolutely important. You can't fake passion.
Okay, so let's talk about staging events. If you're a marketer, why is it so important to stage your own events?
You know, the butcher shop that holds the sausage sizzle outside his shop, particularly of a Saturday morning, which is the peak trading time, always beats the butcher across the road that closes his door to keep the air conditioning in. And I use that example because I lived in a little country town in the Hunter Valley for a dozen years, and there were two butchers in town. The guy that cleaned up the market share was the guy that had the sausage sizzle outside his shop all the time and had his door open and paid for that extra amount of money to have the air conditioning blow down on the front so that he didn't have to close his door. The guy across the road closed his door because he wanted to keep the air in and never had a sausage sizzle. Who do you think won most of the market?
I'm guessing the sausages.
You got it. Because he was holding an event. Now, that's a corny little event, I know, compared to a cocktail party or a big seminar or conference. But everyone of us enjoy going to the opening of the theatre, of new cinema, like a new picture theatre movie. We enjoy going to cocktail parties. We even enjoy, I don't know why, going to a Chamber of Commerce breakfast.
Yeah, I think it's something to do with tribe and belonging and socialising with people of like minds.
It is. It is. I think it is too. That tribal thing is spot on. We do enjoy mixing with people who look and sound like us. That's just the way it is. I'm a bit cheeky, so I don't have too many accountancy friends.
All right, let's talk about being funny. You secured Seinfeld, banking on funny. Tell us this story. What did you learn from working with someone like Jerry Seinfeld, the comic legend?
Look, you know what? That's a great segue with what we've just been talking about.
Were you master of your domain? Sorry, were you master of your domain?
absolutely being the expert in your domain, and he is. There's no question about that. But the point is that he actually excels at just being normal, at just being regular. And so, therefore, when you compare him to a lot of the manic big comedians, he doesn't have as much work to do. He said that to me. He said, look, you know, when I was talking about his observational humour, and I'll touch on how we used him in a moment for the banking commercials, but when I had the chance to just speak off camera with him, he said, look, you know, whereas the other comedians like Jim Carrey have to keep up with the wars and the presidents and all the things that are happening around, he said, my jokes are 20 years old. I'll do a joke about mum and dad. And he said, I can use that in 20 years' time. I don't have to keep on rewriting jokes to keep up with whatever's happening in the news. And I thought, boy, how smart is that? He's created a system where his jokes are evergreen. They're just as relevant now as they would have been 20 years ago, because it's a joke about mums and dads, or it's a joke about the corner grocery store. It's got nothing at all to do with today's events. And I took out of that a great lesson, and that is try and make sure that your products, or if you're in the information game like I am, your services are timeless. And the other thing that he does, it's observational humour. You know what? He just talks about things that are everyday, down to earth, and he doesn't have the stress upon him that a lot of others would have if they had to keep up with, you know, political events.
Is he funny in real life?
Yeah, very, very funny. He's again, it's really nice to see this, because a lot of times we see people on TV and then when you meet them, they're not like they are on TV. He's exactly, absolutely 100% the same as he is on that TV show.
What's his energy like?
Oh, great. Look, he's more laid back than, you know, your wacky comedians, because that's his style, that's his nature, and I think that's what will probably keep him in the business for a long time, because he is so laid back. But his style is just very well mannered. I mean, so whoever's listening to this knows what the context of the Seinfeld thing is. The bank that I looked after for about a dozen years in Australia happens to be a regional building society called the Greater Building Society. And I suggested to the building society, because a mate of mine had put the Billy Connolly campaign together for ING, I suggested we do something like that. So we did a lot of research. I had never watched much of Seinfeld, so it wasn't that I liked Seinfeld. We just basically did some research, found out that he was an evergreen personality in terms of his popularity. I chased him for 9 months, and I won't bore you with all the details, but persistence beats intelligence.
Really? And what finally closed the deal to get him?
What finally closed, I asked him when I got over to America and met him for the first time in his office on the top floor of a high rise in New York. I said, you know, you've got more money than God. Why did you end up doing this? Because whilst to us it was a lot of money, to him it was nothing. And he said, well, I love Australian sense of humour. So he said, I love your cheeky sense. He said, you asked me to take the you-know-what out of the banks. And he said, I do that for a living. And he said, thirdly, I thought if I didn't say yes, you'd never bloody go away.
Traders listening, persistence beats intelligence.
Absolutely.
John, is there anything you'd like to offer our listeners?
Oh, look, I'll tell you what I can do is that I produced a book, and it's a rather large book. In fact, it's the size of a tabloid newspaper. Mm. So therefore, if I'm Mr. Wow, then I can't write a little book, can I? And what I've done is that I've taken a snapshot of that book and snippets from a few of those chapters, and I've put them together in an e-book, which we've called the $1 billion the $1 billion Wow Secrets book. And in that, I actually show people how they can create, very much what we've been talking about today, how to create a wow for your business. So I'm happy to give that to your listeners, your viewers, as a free gift.
Thanks, John. You're the man of stories. John Dwyer, I love talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Caroline. All the best.
I'll often ask people whether they're only allowed to eat with plastic knives and forks. Your mum's written your name on your undies and tied 5 cents in a hanky for you, like used to happen when you were a kid.
Has Chris Tate always been like this? Joseph Barrington Lou worked with Chris as a stockbroker many years ago. And Louise Bedford caught up with Joseph in Cafe Conversations to take a sneak peek at Chris's early trading years.
I'm here with Joseph Barrington Lou. Now, Joseph, the last time we had a cup of coffee together, well, I drink tea, but you had a cup of coffee, was around about 1999.
That has been a long time.
It has been a long time. Now, Joseph, I've loved having a look at your Trade Risk Manager. Where should people go to be able to get more information about your product, which will help them with their portfolio management?
Oh, well, they've got two options. They can either go to paconsulting.net.au or just Google JBL Risk Manager. and they'll find you either my site or any one of the resellers.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to hearing your views about Chris Tate, because I know you worked with Chris Tate many, many years ago. You see, I think that's one of the interesting parts about having such longevity in the industry such as we have. Tell us about Chris Tate in terms of how he used to service his clients, because we know Chris Tate used to be a broker. We don't see that side of him anymore. What was he like, Chris Tate, the early years?
The early years of Chris Tate. On the outside, you feared the guy. But I was fortunate enough to work with him, and he says it as it is. And hard to find anyone else like him. At that time, he was very proud of his record at the stock market for the biggest profit in one day trading options, I think it was. But I've always got a great deal of respect for Chris.
And has he influenced you with your own trading and with everything that you've put into your portfolio manager?
To a certain extent. Working on mechanical systems, those that sort of remove the emotion. I love working with mathematics, but a lot of people do not. So what I've done is try to do all that work for the trader. I've found unless you make it easy, they just won't keep using it. That's it.
That's it. Oh, good stuff. Look, I've been working with Chris Tate, I think it's since 1997 in one capacity or another. So it's interesting to find somebody with a bit of shared history with the man. He's somewhat of an enigma. He really is a recluse these days. He only bears his face to people of the mentor program that we're training. It's interesting to see how things have evolved for him. He's very much a secretive person, and he doesn't let a lot of his strategies out unless it's for members of our mentor program.
I did remember there was one time, I think it was around that time, that there was Chris and Tim Lincoln from Lincoln Indicators. And we're arguing about which was better, fundamentals or technicals. And I think we finally agreed at the end it was fundamentals were fine to the financial health of a company, but its technical analysis will give you the timing.
Yes.
And I think that's where they agree. Unfortunately, with me, I don't make much sense out of fundamentals, so I just stick to the timing side of things.
I'm the same way. I used to work for a company with credit information, so I had every piece of data.
Dun & Bradstreet, was it?
Yes, it was. Well done. My goodness. So I had every piece of information at my fingertips, but unfortunately, it didn't make me any extra money from the stock market. Look, Joseph, I've adored having breakfast with you today. I'm sure we'll catch up again
in the very near future.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure. Thank you.
That's all we have for you today, guys. I'd like to thank our contributors, John Dwyer, Joseph Barrington Liu, and Chris Tate. Stay tuned next week for real estate investment beacon and trailblazer Michael Yardney on success and investing mindset. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team here, thanks for your company. See you next time.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.